thanking Debbie Ward for participating in preaching with me this morning. Debbie, as many of you know, is a spiritual leader and a writer with great insight, and she's also been a leader in this congregation in many different ways. So I'm glad to be sharing with the whole group of folks leading worship this morning, including Debbie. One summer, I had the privilege of serving as chaplain in maximum security jail, and one aspect of that ministry was participating in worship services. The guys in that setting taught me some of their favorite hymns, and a couple of them became mine. And one of them is 99 and a half won't do. It goes like, some of you know it, goes like this. Lord, I'm running to 100, 99 and a half won't do. Lord, I'm climbing higher and higher, 99 and a half won't do. 99, Lord, 99, Lord, 99 and a half won't do. In that setting, it was something. Honestly some of the most transformative worship services I've ever participated in. Many of the men gave testimony and preached themselves. And when some of them were giving some of the most inspirational preaching I've ever heard, they would reflect on the song's message. You have to be 100% committed in your faith. You have to be 100% committed to the Lord your God. And I love the spirit of the singing and the preaching. I would fly out. But at times, I found it tough to square that theological stance away with our Unitarian Universalist faith. Because as many of you know, we do not talk very much about being 100% committed in our beliefs. And in many ways, our religious tradition was built on the value of doubt and doubting. And we cherish that history. Michael Servetus doubted that the Trinity was biblical truth, or that people had to go through the church leaders to find truth. The Unitarians and Universalists doubted the Calvinist teachings that people were inherently sinful or worthless. The Transcendentalists doubted the Christian assertion that salvation came predominantly through Jesus Christ. The humanists doubted that God had to be involved in the religious experience. Liberation theologians doubted that people had to accept things as they are and just as God's plan. And the benefits of all that doubting have been significant. All of those doubts played a role in creating openings for exciting and empowering new religious beliefs and principles, such as the oneness of all divinity, the individual human capacity to directly find truth, upholding dignity and worth of all human beings, finding the spark of the divine in all living creatures and throughout nature, and a clear, powerful call to work as partners with the oppressed for justice and equality. All of that is true and powerful benefits of the doubting. And now and then, I think back to the friends in jail who sang about being 100% committed to their faith, and I think sometimes we're missing the boat a little bit. And that's because, along with all the positive contributions, the central role of doubt has created significant disadvantages and limitations on our religious maturation. Doubt can be like toxic groundwater in our ecosystem. At times, we have overly doubted the importance of community with outcomes of excessive individualism. At times, we have impeded progress by intensively doubting our leaders. At times, we have overly doubted ourselves. with the result of not believing in our own capacities to do good for ourselves and for the world. Buddhist teacher Tara Brach says it like this, similar to investigation. Healthy doubt arises from the urge to know what is true. It challenges assumptions of the status quo in the service of liberation, healing, freedom. In contrast, unhealthy doubt arises from fear or aversion, and it questions one's own basic potential or worth or the value of another person. We have to admit there are many examples of how with fear, we question our own basic worth. Sally is a newly retired person. She serves on a committee where everyone else is still active in their careers. And Sally doubts her potential to hang in there with the speed of and the content of the committee's worth. She worries she's dragging them down. There are many examples of how with aversion we question the value of another. Growing up, Jack always got messages from his family that going to school for a master's degree would be somewhat of a waste of time. That's more of an activity for rich people or fancy people, they said. And he never went on to get his master's degree. Now, he has friends who are working in graduate school, and while talking to his wife, Jack can be heard saying stuff like, "Who do they think they are? I really don't think they're smart enough or have their act together enough to do that anyway." And in his heart, Jack knows that he is just jealous and putting his friends down as a way of coping with his own struggles. Here's the good news. The good news is we also know it's true. We have to lift up. There are many examples of how with honesty and courage, we trust ourselves. Karen has been divorced from the father of her children for 22 years. Now she's a grandmother and still active in her work life. Karen wishes she had a life partner with whom to share things, but she does not. And Karen chooses to focus on the positive. And as an example, every summer she packs up her car and she drives across the country and goes wherever her soul calls her to go and does whatever makes her happy. She could have sat home and just said, I wish I could do that, but I can't because I'm alone. We celebrate the good news that there are many examples of how with honesty and courage we trust others. That committee of people working with retired Sally are 100% sure that she is a great contributor to their common work, and they tell her that all the time. Cheryl and Jody are married with kids, and they have many differing parenting philosophies and styles. This is another example of how gays and straights are so different in their marriages. They have different philosophies of parenting. Cheryl says Jody's too loose, and Jody says Cheryl is too uptight. But as a result of heart-centered conversations, the two have grown to trust each other and know that they are both doing their very best at providing a safe, loving environment for the kids to grow up in, and they don't. They just say, "I give you space. I trust you." The dynamics of trust and doubt can be tricky, so I think most of us can probably benefit from reflecting on this poem about the elusive perfect cup. It's time for me to see the flaws of myself and stop being alarmed. If I wait to be perfect before I love myself, I will always be unsatisfied and ungrateful. If I wait until all the flaws, chips, and cracks disappear, I will be that cup that stands on the shelf and is never used. I believe most of us hunger deeply to be thoroughly used up by life. We want to give life our best shot, and 99.5 won't do. Knowing that most of us also have some basic tendencies towards fear and aversion, we have to regularly practice courage and trust. So that's why Daniel was talking to the children about how we can grow in the trust of ourselves, others, and life itself by singing songs like, "When I breathe in peace. When I breathe out love." We can trust that breath, peace, and love are there for ourselves and for others. How do you practice trusting yourself, others, and life itself?